confessing my sins one to another.
Phil's Osophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
This is a Too Wretched for Radio. Phil, mea culpa. I owe you an apology. I think I crossed a line.
What'd you do?
I sinned. Well, I was listening to you. We were driving to Birmingham. That's in Alabama. Because you're on the East Coast, and you don't know about us little people here.
No, I'm on the West Coast.
Oh, you're in the West. Oh, so much for that sarcasm working. So, by the way, is California still a part of America? Do we have to erase a star?
Yeah, no, we're still part. I think there's a movement that's trying to get us to vote on whether to break the state up into smaller pieces, which would be kind of nice, you know, let Los Angeles and San Francisco stand on their own. But I don't think that's going to go anywhere.
No, I saw that very thing. Some, like, the nice parts can stay the nice parts, and Los Angeles can just be its own country.
Yeah.
I think it's a wonderful idea, personally. But in Birmingham, on our drive there, was listening to you at Grace Life Pulpit. First of all, Phil, I'm telling you, we are going to turn one of your sermons into a booklet.
Oh,
it
good.
It was magnificently done. Did Jesus claim he was God? That wasn't the title. Jesus is Yahweh, I believe is what it was called.
Yeah, it was sort of my answer to the Jehovah's Witnesses who, in the first place, they say Jehovah is the only proper name for God, which is wrong because in Hebrew it's Yahweh. Then they deny the deity of Christ. And so I quoted several places in the New Testament where Jesus applied to himself texts from the Old Testament that spoke of Yahweh, proving the deity of Christ.
And it was excellent. In your presentation, was it 8 reasons that Jesus is God? Something like that. It was just a bomb diggity. So we listened to that one, and then driving home, listened to another sermon, you were all over the place, really, but it was Romans 8:34, and you were talking about from eternity past justification to present justification to ongoing justification. We're forever justified now, called as saints. And you basically did it from bopping through Romans 1 through 8
yes.
to demonstrate that justification is not a future event. Is it the Free Grace people who teach that justification is a future event?
No.
Would that be Lewis Berry Schaefer, maybe Zane Hodges? It happens in the future when you ultimately meet?
Yeah, no, that's not their error. It's mainly... I think I was responding to some of the N.T. Wright aficionados, people who talk about final justification. They treat justification as sort of a provisional issue, that God has declared us righteous, but the final judgment will really settle the issue, so that they see justification as a kind of long, drawn-out maybe process isn't the right word. That Roman Catholics deal with justification as a process. But the people who talk about mm-hmm. final justification see it almost as a two-stage declaration, that God provisionally declares us righteous, and then somehow in the future, based on our own works, he'll settle the issue at the final judgment. And I was pointing out that, no, when the Apostle Paul deals with justification, he always emphatically deals with it as a past-tense reality for the believer. We have been justified by faith. And therefore, we have peace with God right now. So our justification, if you're a believer, your justification is settled.
Yeah, I basically ripped off your premise. Now, please note, I didn't rip off your contents because I only listened to it on the drive from Birmingham back to Atlanta.
Yeah.
But I went, oh, I want to do that for the sermon that I preached on Sunday. So I did my own version of gleaning through Romans 1 through 8 to really get to verses 38 and 39, that emphatic crescendo. Nothing is going to separate you from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. To talk about the issue of eternal security versus conditional security.
Right. Yeah.
So my confession to you is, I kind of ripped off your premise. Didn't take the contents, but I sure did rip off the idea.
Yeah, well, that's not a sin because that sermon isn't really, I mean, the idea behind that sermon isn't original with me either. In fact, I'm always wary of anybody who thinks it's really good to preach a totally original idea that nobody's ever thought of before. That's usually a bad sermon. So you didn't sin by borrowing that. I'm sure I took a lot of what I said from various commentaries and other things I'd heard.
Well, one of the thoughts there were a couple of thoughts that struck me. Conditional security. Wait a second. If there's a condition, it's not secure at all.
Yeah, that's right.
If there's it could be lost. If I went to the bank and I said, "Is my money secure?" And they said, "Yes, but if this happens or that happens or you lose your PIN number, you've lost it." Well, wait a second. I want my money secure. So you attach conditional to security and it's not I think that's a theology that I don't think we can call it heretical, but it sure has shipwrecked a lot of people.
Yeah, and Scripture is absolutely clear on it. Even Jesus says, "The one who believes on me has eternal life and shall not come into condemnation." How could you be any more emphatic than that?
No, it's all over the place. I mean, Paul is all over it, Peter, Jude, the one who is able to keep you from stumbling. The verses just go on and on and on. However, Phil, I did find one present tense because I studied all of the different phrases when he used justification. I did find one that was in the present tense for the ongoing. You're being justified. He talked, you've been justified and you're being justified. And that was also both, whether it was present, and I only found one instance of that. All the rest, like you said, were past tense. It's the passive voice.
Yeah, all right.
I thought you were going to pick up that ball and run. So the passive voice, we're being acted upon. Our justification is not active.
To take that ball and run with it, I'd have to know the exact verse and the context of what you're citing there. I'm not sure.
Oh, no, you can make stuff up.
Oh,
Phil,
all right.
This is 21st century evangelical Christianity. Just go with it. We're going to unhinge pretty much everything from reality, so why not this? But it was when it would talk about being justified, it was always in the passive voice because our justification is not something that we conjure up. It is something that happens to us and for us.
Right.
So I just thought that was incredibly encouraging.
Yeah, it is. To me, that is the, not just to me, that is the heart of the gospel. Paul was emphatic about that. When you read any context, Galatians, Romans, where Paul is either presenting or defending the gospel, the issue that is at the heart of what he's defending is always the principle of justification by faith.
And when we forget that from eternity past, present, future glorification, you get all wobbly-kneed, you get all shaky, sin freaks you out totally, and it just doesn't cause you to rejoice. So thanks for the idea and the really good preaching. Can't encourage you enough. Grace Life Pulpit, all of this, sir. I haven't heard a stinker from you yet, Phil, so don't start now.
We don't put those online.
Oh, I see. There's some selective editing. How convenient. But enough of my groveling. Would like to talk about a different preacher and some different sermons, Phil. I don't know if you caught this story, but they did a survey, which frankly, I don't think we need any more of. That does raise a question, though. I'm glad I brought this up. Why does Lifeway do so many polls and surveys? What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you on the surveys, and it seems to me that the people who do the surveys, even the evangelical organizations that do surveys like Barna, I think they're pretty careless in how they define people as evangelicals or true believers, born-again believers, however they say it. I always look at those statistics with great skepticism because I think they purposely broaden the definition of what constitutes a believer, and it skews the statistics, you know? Like the old statistic that people commonly quote saying that just as many evangelical believers get divorces as people in the world. I've been in a number of evangelical churches over the years, large conservative churches like Moody Church and Grace Community Church and several others. Never in any church I've been in has the divorce rate been anywhere approaching this, right. what the statistics suggest, which yeah. is something like 50% of people supposedly get a divorce.
That's right.
In the churches I've been in, divorces are so uncommon. And in Grace Church, which is a large church, we must have 10,000 people on our membership rolls. We discipline people who get divorced for unbiblical reasons. And over a year's time, if we disciplined four people for divorcing, it would be that would be a high number. It's just not that many people.
Yeah. You know, I think why Lifeway does it. Okay. I think I'm going to answer my own question. It's because it seems to me that a lot of the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the owner of Lifeway, they're pragmatic to the core.
Yeah.
And so they do polls and surveys so that the pastors out in the pulpits can get a whiff of what's going on in culture to adjust their messages appropriately. That's all I can conclude. Otherwise, why do they spend so much money on all this polling?
Yeah. Well, there's a tendency too today to look at religion as business. It's a business. And in fact, you even hear leading pastors in megachurches talking about being a CEO rather than a shepherd. That's one of Andy Stanley's favorite things. Don't think of yourself as a shepherd. Think of yourself as the CEO of a big business. And once you start thinking of the church as a business, you're going to do all these business tactics. And worst of all, once you think we're a business, then one of your goals is going to be to increase the size of your constituency. And so your definitions of...
Got to grow that customer base.
Yeah, right. Well, look, this happened with Christianity Today, the magazine. When they started, they used to call themselves the house organ of evangelical Christianity. They were supposed to be the representative of evangelicalism. But in order to increase the size of their constituency, they had to continually broaden the definition of what is a evangelical. And every year it would be a little bit broader and a little bit broader until I remember when they were approaching their 50th anniversary. Maybe this is more than a decade ago now. They ran an article commemorating the fact that they've been around for 50 years and they were the representative of evangelicalism. They did an article exploring the question of what is an evangelical? What's the distinguishing feature of evangelicalism? And they couldn't define it anymore. They had more or less broadened the definition so much that it couldn't be defined. And they concluded the discussion by saying maybe the distinguishing feature of evangelical Christianity is its diversity, which is a ridiculous statement, but that shows you how far they had moved from their original moorings, and it also explains everything that's wrong with Christianity today. They're simply not evangelical anymore.
You meant Christianity today. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
So here is a survey for your consideration. Are you ready for the top 12 most influential and effective preachers in the English-speaking world, according to George W. Truett Theological Seminary? That's part of Baylor. It's a national survey. Are you ready for the most effective preachers?
I'm not only ready, I am dying to hear this.
I'm going to work my way from the bottom, all right? I don't know if these are in any particular order, but the last guy that they've got on this website at Baylor University, Ralph Douglas West. Have you ever heard of this effective English-speaking preacher?
I have not. I have no clue who that is.
All right. How's about this effective Episcopalian priest, professor, author, Dr. Barbara Brown Taylor? Are you familiar with Barbara Brown Taylor?
Again, no.
All right.
Now, wait. These are the most influential. These are preachers?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Are not authors, not influential figures, but preachers. So that woman is a...
Effective. They're the most effective preachers.
Oh, it's not influential. It's effective. Okay.
Well, yeah, okay. They just said effective. I threw an influential.
Do they explain how they define that?
Do you really want me to go look up the rules of the game here from the survey?
No, go ahead.
Otis Moss the Third.
No. Never heard of him either.
Well, he's the pastor of Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago. Progressive National Baptist Convention. I knew that. All right. Let's give this one a go. Thomas Long.
Sorry.
Nothing. Huh. Joel Gregory.
Yes, I have heard of him.
Ah, well, there we go. We've just like a blind squirrel that finds a clock twice a day in the shed. All right, tell us about Joel Gregory. Everything you know about Joel Gregory.
I don't know that much about him. He's a Southern Baptist leader, right?
Well, let's see. I'm just doing this from memory, but he holds the George W. Truett Endowed Chair in Preaching and Evangelism at George W. Truett Theological Seminary at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. He is recently recognized by Baylor and his peers for 50th preaching anniversary. He brought the concluding message at the Baptist World Congress in Durban, South Africa in 2017 and serves on the Baptist World Alliance Commission in Worship and Spirituality. That's just from memory.
Wasn't he also briefly pastor of First Baptist in Dallas?
Does not say that.
Okay. I may be wrong about that. But anyway.
Hmm. Apparently, though, if he was the pastor of First Baptist Church in Dallas, we know that he was definitely a patriot. Alrighty. Those are the names I didn't know either, Phil. Here are some names that we all do. One of the most effective preachers is Charles Swindoll.
Yes.
He is an effective preacher.
He is, and I wouldn't argue about that one.
Yeah, and his influence has been massive. I have to say, Charles Swindoll was actually quite helpful. He was a part of my conversion story because I was listening to him on the radio. Man has a great voice. And it's called Insight for Living, and that's exactly what he does. He's not top shelf theology.
Right, and he's not a classic biblical expositor like, say, John
nope.
MacArthur, but he is, I think, maybe the easiest to listen to preacher I've ever heard. His delivery is perfect. His enunciation is, and so if you're talking about his technique, his delivery, I would say, yeah, absolutely. I would have put him higher up on this list. If I had his voice and his ability to, his storytelling ability, which is just uncanny.
Yeah, yeah. What was Suddenly Next Morning? Was that the name of the book that he wrote for Easter? Joey, do you remember that Suddenly Next Morning? I think that's what it was called. It was kind of his telling of the story from a perspective of other people.
Yeah.
You know, like a shop owner, et cetera. It was, wow, his voice and delivery.
He's like that. He is extremely creative. He's a very gifted man. I would have put him on this list.
All right. You don't agree with everything with him theologically, but you definitely agree that man's an effective preacher.
Right.
As is Andy Stanley's on this list. Oh, Andy Stanley is on this list. Effective preacher.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they'd put him on there if they're just talking about, you know, somebody who draws a large number of people. He clearly does that. For me, listening to him is like, you know, listening to a screeching woman, you know, with a raspy voice. It's the opposite of Swindoll. I could listen to Swindoll for a long time, and he's, like I said, very easy to listen to. I don't get that with Andy. I don't understand his appeal. Sorry. But I can see why they would put him on there.
Yeah, but there's a lot of times with these guys, I don't get why. Rick Warren is another one that baffles me.
Yeah.
Listening to him, it's like it just drains the life out of me listening to him. And yet, all right, Haddon Robinson is on here.
Okay, I get that too. And in fact, he taught homiletics preaching and was one of the champions for a long time of expository preaching. I think towards the end of his life, he changed his opinion on biblical exposition and said he didn't really think necessarily that was the best form of preaching. But what he said early on and the way he preached was very effective, and he influenced a generation of expositors. So I can see why he'd be on that list. I think that's legitimate.
Next on the list, a name that we all know, is John Piper.
Yeah, and again, there. John Piper's skill, I think, is the passion with which he delivers what he says, and his fearlessness in saying things that he knows might not be popular or easy to receive, and yet he says it with such passion and devotion and biblical support, usually. Again, I don't agree with everything about his theology, and I would maybe have some criticisms about him, but I would agree that John Piper probably belongs on that list of the most effective preachers.
The next fellow, I just tried to watch his 25-minute presentation. He was in Great Britain. Some massive assembly of educated British people, which they all are because they have that accent, Dr. Timothy Keller.
Yeah, well, I know he's popular, and again, because of the obvious scope of his influence, I can understand why he's on that list. He is not a favorite of mine.
But as far as being an effective preacher, do you think that he meets that criteria?
Yeah, my judgment of him would be a little harsher than that. I think he's pleasingly ambiguous, and a lot of people who are drawn to him like the ambiguity of the way he... It's the opposite of Piper, in a way. Keller has an unusual skill for tiptoeing around the difficult issues.
Yeah.
And I think that pleases a lot of people. It doesn't please me.
Yeah, I think he's been mentoring Andy Stanley in that regard. Tony Evans, Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, again, I would have significant theological differences with Tony Evans, but in terms of his delivery...
What are they?
He is on the opposite end of the spectrum on the lordship issue from where I would be. And he wrote a book where he took a view of the eternal disposition of those who have never heard the gospel, where he says he thinks it's possible to be saved having never heard about Christ.
Yikes.
And so there are some elements like that in his theology. When he deals with the sovereignty of God, I think he messes up the whole idea. He so badly wants to get some free will in there that I think he diminishes what Scripture says about the sovereignty of God. So those are the main things. When he preaches the gospel and does biblical exposition, he can be quite good. And his delivery, again, is powerful. So, yeah, I can see why he'd be on that list.
The final man on the list of the 12 effective preachers.
This is the top guy?
Of 2018. Are you ready?
Yeah, I just have this fear it's going to be Joel Osteen.
No, it's not.
Oh,
but
good.
Here's who's not on the list, is John MacArthur. How can that be?
It was predictable. I would have been surprised if John had been on this list.
Where's R.C. Sproul?
Yeah, but you can tell that whoever put this list together has a certain theological bent that would...
It came from Baylor.
Yeah, it would make him hostile to someone like R.C. Sproul, John MacArthur. So that doesn't surprise me.
All right. Well, the fellow who did make the list, however, it's a voice that we all recognize.
The thing is a total dog's breakfast.
Alistair Begg.
Oh, yeah. Well, good for him.
Oh.
He is, you know, I love to hear him preach.
I did too.
And he's theologically sound, and his greatest skill is his likability. How could you not like him, you know?
He's a tremendously likable fellow.
The real resource of any church begins around the age of 50, 55. And just to the point where people have put themselves in a position, financially, emotionally, to become an incredible amount of use, they start to talk hibernation. You can't find them. And so I want to just give a word of warning and encouragement to all who are beginning to think in that way. I want to ask you, what are you planning to do between the age of 60 and 110?
Alistair Begg. That's a pretty in-your-face challenge. And yet, like you said, you don't get the sense that he hates you.
Yeah.
He thinks that you're bad, a bad Christian. Likeable.
So he was number one on that list.
Well, that's it. That his picture. Maybe it was alphabetical. I don't know.
Well, that's good. Anyway, I'm glad they had him on that list. They're not totally out to lunch.
So here is what we would like to do as we conclude this Too Wretched for Radio. Enjoy one of my favorites from Alistair Begg.
I was at a church in California just a few weeks ago now, back in August, I think it was, time flies, and I went there, I had a Sunday free, and I was staying with friends, and I went down to the church, and I was excited because I get to go now, and I don't have to do anything at all except do whatever they tell me to do. And so I sat there, and I waited for it to begin. And it was quite fascinating, actually. They had big screens, and they had a clock on the screens, and when I got in, it said 5 minutes. And I'd only been in about 2 seconds, and you won't be surprised, it said 4 minutes and 58 seconds. And then it counted down, and eventually when it counted down, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, and just right on the moment of time, the band began, and I was waiting for David Letterman at that point. Anybody, I didn't know what was going to happen next. And then eventually the band did what it did, and then the person who was to lead the praise, his opening gambit was this. Hey, how do y'all feel this morning. Well, that was enough for me. I was ready. We could have had the benediction right there. That was so good. I thought, what kind of New Testament question is that? How do you all feel this morning? If I told you how I feel, especially in light of the last 5 minutes, you would question whether I was even a Christian at all. So don't ask me that question. Ask me what I know. Ask me what I know. Don't ask me what I feel about myself. Ask me what I know about God. Ask me what I know about His Word. Ask me what I know to be a verity that can deal with my soul. That's what I need. Don't make me sing songs about how I feel. Don't. The silly, repetitive songs again and again. I just want to praise you, lift my hands and say I love you. You are everything to me. Goodness, at 8:30 on a Sunday morning, I'm barely ambulatory. I can't start there. And you want me to say that? I just kicked the dog, and I don't even have a dog. I got argued with someone because they took my parking space. I never had spilled my coffee. I didn't read my Bible. I'm a miserable wretch. And now you want me to start here. How do you feel? I feel rotten. That's how I feel. What do you got for me? The answer, nothing. I got nothing for you. That's why you have to get yourself under the control of the Scriptures. That's why it is what we know, the verities of the Scriptures, which then fuel our hearts and our emotions and lead us on. Hence, praise my soul, the King of Heaven. To His feet thy tribute bring. Ransomed, healed, restored, forgiven. Who like thee his praise should sing? Okay, now we've got something to sing about. For we've been reminded of truth. You've been ransomed. You've been healed. You've been restored. You've been forgiven. You're looking away from yourself now. You're looking out and to Christ. And it is in this that we have something that fuels our praise.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Stop doing it.
Phil, have you gone mental?
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?